calling all teachers who are likely getting ready for class right now. If you have a minute, we'd love to hear from you about the best and maybe even the worst parts of your job. What you love, what you wish was different. We'd like to know if you've ever considered quitting and what has stopped you. As we talk with the author of It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. On the heels of Teacher Appreciation Week last week, and as we approach graduation day, when a new class of teachers will be entering the hallways of teaching, our guest's book offers some advice to new teachers and some encouragement to teachers who might be struggling. And we welcome your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Tom Rodenmacher, an English teacher in Minneapolis. He was honored as Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2014. He is the author of the book, It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you said you strive to write the book that you wish you would have had when you started out. Tell us why.
Well, you know, I think teachers go through a long process of school and, you know, tests and all sorts of stuff to get their license and get certified. And yet when you suddenly stand in front of a group of, you know, 30 teenagers and it's your job to actually make them do something, it turns out there's a lot of stuff that you don't know yet, and a lot of conversations that you need to have that you haven't had yet. And so I've had a lot of student teachers in my career. I really love having student teachers, and I found that I was kind of telling them the same stories over and over again. And so the beginning of this book was me just deciding to start writing some of those stories down.
Yeah. So so your college experience and your student teaching training only teach you so much about being a teacher?
Correct. Yeah. There's it's a really complex job. I mean, I've said before, you know, it's like 1,000 puzzles a day that you need to figure out in 30 seconds. And so some of it is just you need to keep doing it and you need to keep trying and failing and trying. But I also think that, you know, and the reason why the title of the book is It Won't Be Easy is I feel like that's one of the messages that we never really got in our teacher prep programs in our colleges. Everyone thinks they have the answer, especially if they are not currently teaching. They think they have the answer. And we were told, you know, as long as you do this, this, and this, then everything's going to work out just fine. And then you get in front of the classroom and realize that there's a lot more going on than that. And you know, no matter how good you are and no matter how wonderful the school you're in, it's not going to be easy to teach.
Yeah. So that's the It Won't Be Easy part of the title. Without getting too explicit, why is it slightly unprofessional?
I think that there is, you know, teaching is one of those professions that we are, you know, held to a higher personal standard, which I am fine with in most respects. But I think also we're not recognized as full people sometimes. And so, you know, some of the stories in my book are stories of, you know, teachers at happy hour and teachers who are upset and, you know, maybe some of the foul language the teachers use when they're not in front of the classroom and all those things that are real about teaching that aren't often talked about.
Fair enough. But let's go into the rules of teaching. And one of them is school is unfair. Why is school unfair?
Well, you know, we're still working on a pretty outdated model of school. And so inherently, you know, with 30 different kids in a classroom and every kid having their own needs, school is going to serve some of those kids better than it's going to serve others. And I think if teachers, the more we recognize that our job is to try to level that playing field for our kids, that's a powerful piece of what we do during the day. And we're working against a lot of different reasons that school might be unfair for a kid.
Yeah, and it, I take it could be frustrating trying to level that playing field and maybe not being successful.
It really is. I mean, I'm in my 11th year. I have a young daughter, so I should be sleeping better at night when I have the chance. And I'm still, I mean, Saturday night I was up at 3 in the morning for an hour and a half thinking about one of my 7th grade students that, you know, it's May now and I have yet to figure out what this student truly needs from me and what I need to do better in my classroom. I can tell he's brilliant. I can tell he is a smart, capable kid. And we just have not clicked together yet to figure out how to get him there.
The next rule of teaching, school is unimportant. Now, that's unusual sentence to hear from a teacher. Why do you say school is unimportant?
Because learning is really important, and relationships are important, and critical thinking is really important. But that's not often what we as teachers spend a lot of time on and a lot of our emotional energy on. And this is something I need to remind myself at the end of every day that, you know, being really upset about tardies and being really upset about points and tests and seating charts and who got in from lunch on time and supervision schedules and lunch schedules, all these things that kind of make up what the school day is. You need to do them, and they need to be good, but, you know, it's not the reason that anyone got into teaching. You know, no one got into teaching to enforce dress codes. And so, you know, where are we spending too much of our time on the system of school versus what's really, really important to make sure it's happening in our classroom?
And finally, your rules of teaching include compassion before all else. Tell us what that means.
You know, I think in May, again, that's one of the hardest rules for all of us. And I want to be clear, you know, I wrote a book about teaching not because I have all the answers to teaching, but because I think I've figured out some of the hardest questions to ask. And for me in May, it's hard sometimes to remember that my primary job is to care about the people in my classroom and to not be upset at the fact that there's 4 fidget spinners going at one time and all the different things that can make you frustrated. And, you know, that we have to care. We have to care about our kids, especially when they're making it hard for us to do so.
So why did you want to be a teacher?
My mom was a teacher and was a phenomenal teacher in Waterloo, Wisconsin. She was a special ed teacher there. And I watched the work that she did really change and save lives. And I always had it in my head that I would love to do it and maybe pushed against it just for a while just to prove that I wasn't doing it just because my mom was doing it. And then I went to an arts camp in Stevens Point, Wisconsin in high school and, kind of as one fell in love with the idea of working with teenage artists and always kind of tried to keep that, foremost in my head. And so as I was finishing college with an English major, I applied for a writing MFA and I applied for a teaching program and I didn't get into the writing MFA. And so teaching program came up, and I'm so happy that that happened.
Yeah, and I should have noted that you were raised in Wisconsin, but you teach in Minnesota. Is there a reason for that?
Mainly because when I was a senior in high school in Kettle Moraine High School in Wisconsin, my girlfriend went to college in Minneapolis. And so that moment, suddenly I was in college in Minneapolis, and there we have stayed.
Yeah, well, that's that's honest enough. So for example, the Act 10 situation had nothing to do with you being in Minnesota.
No, that was all after I moved up here.
Yeah. We are talking with Tom Rodenmacher, English teacher in Minneapolis. He was honored as Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2014, and he is the author of the book, It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your experiences. Perhaps you are a teacher, and we'd like to know what you think of your job. Are you in love with it or not? Are you struggling with parts of it or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Thank you to all who contributed during our spring membership drive, which wrapped up on Friday. More than 1,500 listeners pledged, including more than 350 new members. And guess what? You helped plant 800 trees in Wisconsin in our centennial forest. You donated more than $275,000. Your support builds a strong today, tomorrow, and the next 100 years for the Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you love. So thank you so much for your support. Now here's what you paid for. We are talking about teaching. And why teaching is not a very easy profession, and what our guest loves about teaching, and what's frustrating him about teaching. And we welcome your questions, your experiences. We'd love to hear from teachers. Why do you teach? What do you like about it? What struggles do you face? Maybe, listeners, you can talk about how a teacher has changed your life and a favorite teacher. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Tom Rodenmacher is our guest, English teacher in Minneapolis. He is the author of It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. And let's take a call. Eugene in Biola is with us. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
I started teaching in the early 1960s. I had been working in industry, and I wanted out of there, so I went to what we called in Wisconsin at the time, you called a two-year county normal. And when I got out of there, I took off for South Dakota to an Indian reservation for a year, and I spent a one-room. My most enjoyable experience, hope I don't get nervous here, my most enjoyable experience was probably in a one-room country school in Northeast Corner. Yeah. I had all 8 grades, and you talk about creativity, you could do it. And right now, I'm only a little over a year away from 80, and I'm still substitute teaching on a junior high and high school level.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, technology may have changed, but students haven't, and I'm just having a lot of fun doing it, pretty much.
That is really
And I'm
great.
Due down in the district tomorrow, pretty much. But
so have you heard of a teacher in his 80s who's still substituting, Tom?
I'm in awe. I mean, that's fantastic. And the fact that he's still doing it, loving the kids and loving the school. Props to you, man. That's fantastic.
That is. So what about the technology may have changed, but the students haven't. Do you go along with that, Tom?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people are people absolutely anywhere you go. And I think there's a lot of kind of hemming and hawing and kids these days and that kind of stuff about cell phones and the internet and all that. But honestly, the only way I've seen kids change with increased access to the internet is I feel that they're far more literate and empathetic than they were. You know, when I was interested in a new idea or a new part of the world when I was growing up, I had access to, you know, what was in my school library, and that was kind of it. You know, now students can kind of instantly go to the best, most interesting information about a group of people or a school of thought and, you know, can just get tons of information and tons of input from all over the world. in a way that, you know, I don't think any generation before has really grown up with.
Yeah. You know, but I guess I didn't have fidget spinners when I was in school. I'm just kidding. <That's>, those. By the way, I didn't know exactly what the fidget spinners were until Chris Molina pointed it out. I had an idea, but it's just some sort of toy that kids use and teachers are frustrated about.
It is spread exponentially. It's been a year of bottle flipping and fidget spinners. And I think anyone in a school knows exactly what I'm talking about with both of those things. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, I don't know, people are really upset about them for different reasons. And I'm sure they're obnoxious in ways. They haven't really bothered me, but my room's usually pretty chaotic anyway. So adding an extra thing hasn't mattered that much.
Yeah. And back in my day, we had things that we did that annoyed teachers too, and little.
Oh, that is the way the kids have not changed, right? We were making paper footballs,
right,
and flicking them at each other and stuff like that. It's the same stuff.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you a little bit about, as it is, not only is it graduation or approaching graduation for students, it's college students who might want to be teachers. What advice do you have for first-time teachers or those who are looking for a job?
I think, you know, if right now we're in kind of the interviewing time of the year, and I'm actually doing the same thing. And so, you know, I think it's important to understand that you're interviewing a school as much as they are interviewing you. I mean, you want to find somewhere that you want to stay, and that's going to want you and want your talents. And once you land somewhere, I think the biggest thing that new teachers do wrong is expect to do everything right. And when they start to have those hard days and start to struggle and, you know, make mistakes and say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, they start to feel that maybe teaching isn't for them and maybe they're just not good at this. And the reality is, I don't know any teacher who doesn't make those mistakes and do those things. And, you know, it's just that hard, and there's a pretty steep learning curve. So allowing yourself to make those mistakes and learn from them, but not beat yourself up about it.
Yeah, you mentioned you will be interviewing, too. You are looking for another teaching position.
Yeah, this is my 11th year teaching, and I have finally achieved a teaching standard experience of getting laid off because of budget cuts. So I switched districts this year to get back into the classroom. I was a teacher coach last year and missed the kids a lot. And so switched districts, and because I was new to this district and they needed to cut, I found out, 3 weeks ago that I officially don't have a job next year. So it happens to teachers all the time, and, you know, I guess someone figured I should have that experience before I'm done teaching.
That's got to be a real blow, though. You understand, because I suppose the seniority situation, but still, somebody who was Teacher of the Year in 2014, it has been laid off because of budget cuts, and you have to find a new job.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite thing that happened this year so far, but, you know, I think one thing is, like, I was Minnesota Teacher of the Year, and I wrote a book about teaching, and I think it's easy to say, well, shouldn't those things protect my job? But the reality is there's not a teacher in my building who deserved to get cut. And so for me, it's more about what do we need to do to keep these teacher cuts from happening? Because I don't know of a school in any state where they have too many people working there right now. Most schools are working already understaffed, and so when budgets are getting cut and we need to reduce staff, you're asking even fewer people to try to make it through the next year, and that's, I don't know, it's going to be a pretty tough ask for people. So, you know, I'm personally not that happy that I got cut, but I'm actually pretty glad that, you know, I haven't worked myself into a place where I can't get cut just because I'm a fancy guy.
Yeah. Well, So let's talk a little bit about in Wisconsin. You're familiar with what has happened in Wisconsin, though you haven't been teaching here. There a lot of teachers have either left the state or left the profession, in part because of the Act 10, which reduced their collective bargaining rights and changed their teaching profession in other ways. And there's still this feeling of a lack of respect, that teachers don't have the respect they deserve. And so they feel in some, not all, but some feel even demonized, you know, that, you know, for some reason they're the reason why the state was in financial straits some years ago because of their, you know, their salaries or something else. So what advice do you have for teachers when it comes to especially that concern about lack of respect?
I definitely understand it. I mean, there's kind of two pieces to that, right? So, One, I imagine sitting outside of schools and way above schools on the decision-making chain and looking at the amount of money that goes out to education, I imagine it has to be easy to think, well, surely some of that can be cut because it's a really large chunk. And the reality is that we are not spending nearly enough. And when you look at, you know, teacher salaries and the amount of money we pay for personnel in schools, I think there's a movement on, it's been on for a while, to sort of deprofessionalize teaching. And the hope is that if you get the right curriculum pack and you get the right, you know, online reading program, that you can pay people a lot less to just sort of be in a classroom to, you know, just hand out the stuff that needs to be handed out and not recognize the craftsmanship and the mastery that it takes to truly lead a classroom and to truly, you know, take a group of kids from where they are in September to where they need to be in June. I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what that job is and what that job takes to do well. And, you know, so I think it would be great. It would be easy, and I think it would be better for everybody if teaching was easier. But the truth of it is that it's just not, and teachers deserve respect and support for the job that they're doing.
Our guest is Todd Rodenmacher. He is an English teacher in Minneapolis. He is honored as Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2014. His writing has appeared in EdPost, MinPost, on his blog, Mr. Rod's Neighborhood. And he is the author of the book, It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. So he is telling us why teaching is a profession that that can be loved, but there certainly are some downsides, which we're touching on now. We'll talk more about the upsides in a moment. We'd love to hear from you, though, too. What do you consider the downsides or the upsides of teaching? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Beverly on Facebook writes, I loved teaching and I taught music for 40 years. Best parts were the kids and colleagues, but the most difficult part was administrators not being supportive or understanding. Well, let's talk not being supportive or understanding part first. Is that something that you experienced, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think having never been a building principal or a district level employee, I don't understand, obviously, like what every minute of their day is. And I know we ask a lot of principals, but certainly, you know, in 11 years of teaching, maybe three of them have been years that I felt truly supported and appreciated by my leadership. This year happens to be one of them. I work with a phenomenal principal this year. And, you know, I think partly their job is to make sure that we are focusing on the kids. and not getting too wrapped up in the adult things that happen during the day. But, you know, I think it doesn't take a lot to truly let teachers know that you appreciate what they do. And not, you know, there's a bunch of problems, a bunch of things that happen, a bunch of fires that get started every day that can take too much of our attention.
Yeah. And what about the best parts for Beverly, the kids and colleagues? Talk some about that.
That I could not agree more with that. I think that maybe one of the things that I was not ready for with teaching was how much I was going to laugh and how deeply and how often. I mean, kids are absolutely, I mean, they're stunning and they're hilarious. And they're by far the thing that makes teaching the most worth it. And, working with good people who share that love and can help kind of snap you back, is truly important. And I mean, I work with some really amazing, every year I've taught, I've worked with some really amazing teachers, teachers who absolutely dwarf me in ability and skill and what they do. But yeah, I think, you know, when teachers, I get together with a group that I call the family, or we all call ourselves the family. It was a group that all taught eighth grade together for a bunch of years. And we get together a few times a year for dinner and we tell stories about kids, you know, kids from 8, 9 years ago, and we're still telling stories about them and who's heard from them. And, you know, it's you get to have so many more people in your life that you care about and love and that care about you. And that's a tremendous gift that teaching gives us.
Yeah. So what are some of the other benefits of being a teacher?
Well, I'm about 5 weeks away from the biggest one, which is that during most of June, I can not set an alarm clock and have a summer, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'm worth recognizing that I know people work over the summer and I get work done over the summer, but having your summers off to reset yourself and get yourself ready for the next year is awesome. And I love, you know, I remember sitting in high school and watching my English teacher, Miss Caves at Kettle Moraine High School, and realizing that most of what she did during the day was think about puzzles in her head. You know, it's the people puzzles in front of her and how to inspire this one kid who doesn't like reading to start reading and to get this person who already loves writing to push themselves one step further, and thinking about how great of a job that would be. And it really is. You know, my job all day long is to help kids be better versions of themselves. And it's not about how much of anything that I sell. It's not about how much of anything I'm able to put together. I'm just there to help the kids in my room. And I think that's the kind of work that appeals to some people really strongly.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio once again. And when we come back, we would love to hear from you, whether you're a teacher or not. If you are a teacher, what do you love about your job, or what do you wish were what was different about your job? If you left the profession, why did you leave? If you just want to give a shout out to a favorite teacher, we welcome that as well. What do you? What made your favorite teacher so great? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the ups and downs of teaching. And we are looking to hear from teachers or those of you who want to appreciate teachers. We had a call during the news saying, let's hear from more teachers. Well, we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with the author of It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. Our guest is a teacher, English teacher in Minneapolis. He was honored as Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2014. He wrote this book because he thought that this is information that he wished he would have had when he started in the teaching profession. Tom Rodenmacher is our guest, and our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Wondering if you are a current teacher, what is it that you love about the job? What is it that frustrates you about the job? What could you change if you could change something? Well, maybe you retired or you left the profession. Tell us what you're thinking. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Laura on Facebook says, I'm retiring this year. It's bittersweet because I thought I would do this for life. After 35-plus years, I still love teaching and seeing the light bulb go on in my learning-disabled students. But the cookie-cutter curriculum, testing, 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 and all the paper trail expectations, along with the extras that schools need to make school fun for kids, makes it too much. What's your reaction to that, Tom?
Well, I would love to hear actually from more teachers who have been teaching for longer and to hear about how the expectations of teachers have changed over the last few decades. I came in teaching as the, like she said, cookie cutter curriculum and the testing, that a lot of that was starting to be in place, and it's grown since I've started teaching. So I know how that experience feels. But I'm curious about those who taught before, what teaching was like in those days that keep getting called back as being kind of the good old days. I mean, I agree. The worst parts of my job have always involved standardization of some point. I mean, I don't have the same classroom in, you know, my first hour starts in about an hour here, my first class. That class is different than the one right after it, and I have to teach differently to each one of those classes. So the idea that anyone would have an answer that would meet both of those classes' needs, much less all the English classrooms, you know, in our district or in our region, that someone could do something and design a curriculum that would meet all those kids' needs, I think shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what we do. And it's hard. I mean, I think that's true. You know, my mom, when she left teaching, was very clear with me, you know, she left because of the adults, not because of the kids. And I don't think I've ever met a teacher that has left teaching because of the students.
What do you think makes a great teacher?
I mean, fashion is really important. I'm just kidding.
Did you ask me to say what?
You know, I think I know so many different great teachers, and there's not a mold that they fit. You know, I have a student teacher right now who will be a great teacher when she starts in her own classroom next year. And, you know, I'm a loud, blustery guy, and, you know, she's quiet and sweet, and she already reaches kids in a way that I don't, and I reach some kids in a way that she doesn't. And I think being authentically who you are and allowing yourself to be a real person in your classroom and being able to listen and adapt to what kids are telling you, that is truly important. And I think every classroom that does that looks different than each other.
Our lines are full now. I just needed to prod a little bit. Mark in Wisconsin Dells is with us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. What is your story?
Well, I'm a retired teacher of 25 years. I had a career first before I went back to get my certificate to teach. And it was probably the best decision I've ever made in my life. It's something I never I will never, ever regret about the time in the classroom. I did retire, partially because of Act 10, partially because of early retirement benefits. But my main comment, Todd, you're spot on. I'm driving up north right now and really enjoying listening to you. You have an outstanding attitude. I can tell you have a passion for the kids. You care for the kids. And I can't wait to find your book in a bookstore and read it. My biggest concern is, well, like one of your previous emails, I believe it was Bev, not allowing teachers to teach and administrators creating many, many extra things for teachers to do outside of the classroom to justify their own existence. I find, I think perhaps districts should look more at cutting administration and keeping teachers. And Todd, you will find a job.
and thank you, Mark. Tom is our guest. A reaction to that?
There's a salty part of me that definitely has seen what he's talking about happen. You know, there's a lot of district positions, and a lot of them are great. You know, a lot of people that I have friends that work in district positions around Minneapolis, and they do a ton of work. But when those positions work well, it's when they are listening to what teachers need and then helping them get that. When they work poorly, it's when one person thinks that they have the answer and implementing it in a bunch of different schools. And then, you know, there's definitely parts of the job that feel like I'm working to create data and numbers so that somebody can sit in a room somewhere at some time and say, look, my idea is working. And, you know, you can kind of make numbers do what you want them to do. But our time in the classroom is absolutely precious with kids. And I think there's probably nothing that bugs teachers more than feeling like time is being wasted that they could spend on something better. And when they're not trusted to make the decision about what that is, I think that's really exhausting, and I think that is driving people out of the profession.
Thanks, Mark. Anne in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Yes, I've
really enjoyed this program. I'm about to retire. I'm 65, and I've taught 34 years. I was home with my children for about 6 years, and I've taught music. And I think because I've taught music, I've had an enormous amount of creative freedom. And so a number of the things that I see classroom teachers experiencing, I'm not having to go through. But I will say this, I admire them enormously, and I really see compassionate, caring teachers coming to school every day, doing everything they can for children with enormous pressures on them, you know, especially the testing side of it. But I just think they're absolutely amazing. I'm in an elementary school, and my colleagues just have my greatest respect.
Thank you very much, Anne. So, Tom, what advice do you have for teachers, especially new teachers, to deal with the ups and downs of the job, and to, I guess, stick with it?
Well, let me first say, you know, I just finished 2 weeks of testing in my classroom, and I will take 10 more weeks of testing. And if I get to avoid teaching beginning recorder classes, so any music teacher, you guys should get paid double. The respect goes both ways for sure. I think there's talk in a lot of places right now about work-life balance and about self-care. And I think teaching is one of those professions where we all want to be martyrs. And it's about, especially in your first years, who can work the most. And teaching is actually one of those jobs, and it took me a long time to figure this out, that working harder doesn't always make it better. And it's one of the first big problems in your life that spending that extra 3 hours at school every day until the janitors kick you out probably isn't going to make your next day go better. But going home and going for a walk or reading a book and letting your brain rest and coming in with patience and, you know, room to care about kids, that's more important than working yourself, you know, to death and to making sure, you know, I have a new teacher that works right next door to me right now in a math room, and he's often very, very concerned about making sure that every day is loaded with as much curriculum as it possibly can be. And every once in a while I remind him, you know, like if kids don't understand who he is and he doesn't understand who they are and they don't have fun and laugh every once in a while, that all the teaching in the world isn't going to get them to learn math. And so, you know, allowing for some space outside of school and in school, to remember that, you know, it's a big, messy business full of people, and you need to cater to those people every once in a while.
And Dean in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Dean. We're almost out of time, but wanted to get you on. What would you like to say?
Thanks, Joy. I would venture to guess that everybody listening right now, if they thought about who were some of the most influential people in their lives, they'd have to cite at least one good teacher. And these people rank up there amongst, I would say, you know, a good doctor or good clergy in your community. So that's my comment.
And it's a good one, Tom, and maybe that's what can make it all worth it?
Absolutely. And, I as long as I'm on Wisconsin air, I got to give shout-outs to Mr. Horowitz, my fourth-grade teacher, who was at Goldenmeyer School in Milwaukee. And Bill Barter, my art teacher in high school, who me and my wife met in his art class in high school, and he drove up here for our wedding. And he's absolutely, like, those kinds of teachers that shape your life are absolutely incredible. And, you know, as a teacher, you get to be that for some kid. Whether or not you know that you're doing it in the moment or not, you get to be that, and that's what makes it worth it.
Thank you so much for being with us. Tom Rodenmacher is the author of It Won't Be Easy, an exceedingly honest and slightly unprofessional love letter to teaching. Thanks to Brianne Chasseau and to Chris Molina for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.